Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Those watching on Rumble, please like, follow, and share. That's a blessing. And those that are subscribers and get all the things that we provide each week, thank you so much. Thank you for your encouraging emails. Thank you for your financial support. Thank you for your prayers. We appreciate it greatly. Those that are fasting on Tuesdays or Fridays, thank you for doing that. I think God so appreciates it when we're willing to give up things to be closer to Him, to spend more time with Him. And if there was ever a time to fast and pray, I think it's right now in our country's history. Today, I'm going to interview Diana West and get her insights into the State of the Union, what's going on in America and around the world. She always has some very thoughtful things to say and share. So I think you'll really enjoy this, but thank you again for joining me today. Diana West, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Oh, Curtis, it's wonderful to be with you.
I've been watching many of your Patreon videos over the last several months, and I always enjoy hearing your insights into what's going on and in the research you do as an investigative journalist to find out, kind of pull the curtain back. And so I want to start with kind of a broad question, then we'll go more specific on some things we're dealing with in America and around the world today. But from your, again, 30 plus years or more in writing, researching, living in America and experiencing it, what would you say is the current state of the union from your point of view?
Well, it's a good question. It's a broad question. It's a good question. The thing that I was thinking about before our interview today was something along those lines. Where are we? And it seems like so much of what we do is spend time trying to unravel lies all across the board. And it's a strange place to be in. I don't think we felt that way 30 years ago, 40 years ago. There may have been liars, and there may have been, you know, there's evil and there's crime and there's problems. But the sense that everything that we are given or brought to us, that we are on the receiving end, I guess is the way to put it, from the media, social media, the political sphere, the journalists, so-called, et cetera, it's reliably lies. I mean, we must understand them as lies. And so we're in a funny place as citizens trying to have, you know, go on our moral and our religious and our spiritual core to do battle every day on every level. And that's kind of where I think we are. Do you feel that way?
100%. And it's literally, I just heard Mayorkas talking this morning on some interview, and it's literally everything labeled as disinformation or misinformation. Oh, that's the truth.
That word.
100% of the time. I mean, it's like where it has been completely like the 1984 George Orwell, where no black is white, no white is black, and war is peace, and peace is war. Yeah, it is a weird world, because once a lot of people started to wake up since COVID, I think really there was a great awakening there of what's going on. I think I'm being lied to. But yeah, I think we've all recognized now it's almost everything without exception. Even when they don't need to lie, they lie, which is really a weird place to be.
Well, it is. It is. And you realize so much of your own energy and time and life, depending on your profession, is spent trying to pierce and expose these lies. And it's a strange way to spend your time, or have to spend your time. And so it has become more and more oppressive, I think, over the years. I know you and I have talked a lot about my book, American Betrayal, which came out in 2013. And at that time, I was getting to know the late, great journalist M. Stanton Evans. And he, one of his most famous books is Blacklisted by History, which was at his really lifelong effort. It took him really all of his life to get to that point where he wrote this book, revising the terrible revision on Senator Joseph McCarthy. Everything about McCarthy that came into the public square was a lie. And that book, which is, I don't know, 600-700 pages, is devoted to that. And really what I learned from that book was if you could, that there was this need to go into history and expand it much beyond Senator McCarthy's experience, and you had this canvas, this history that was filled with lies, and that's what American Betrayal is sort of attempting to get into. And then, when Stan Evans, who was a big supporter of the book and my work, at one point I received a prize and he was introducing me, and he made the point, kind of putting it very baldly, what we'd both been doing, he'd with McCarthy, me with Cold War, World War II. And then when you finally want to encapsulate it for an audience that may not know about either work, really, he just said, what we have to realize is that everything we've been taught about World War II and the Cold War is a lie. And so when you kind of, it takes a while to get to the point where you can say that so true, so starkly. You have to do a lot of research and
Yes.
thinking and time. We keep refining it. And then you go over the last 10 years, and certainly, as you mentioned, since COVID, since the coup of 2020, I mean, these are big events in our lives. People are starting have really come a long way in terms of getting it, because it really happened to them in real time and they saw it. So many of the lies we deal with are so behind the scenes, and they're so in the weeds, and they're so complicated. But big things happen to you and you realize, well, if they do this, what else do they do? And then we get to this point where people really understand.
And Stanton Evans, I interviewed for my first movie, and he was
Oh, yeah.
such a genius. I mean, I remember sitting there just asking
Yes.
him question after
Yes.
question, and he is just the sharpest man and the most articulate and the most careful how what he said and how
Yes.
he said it. And I so respected him after that interview. I'd read some of his books, but just that time together, we had a couple hours there. I was
Yeah.
like, man, that is an honorable man. That just he made sure everything
Yes.
he said is exactly the truth, and wouldn't say anything. He said, I'm not sure about that, Curtis. A couple of things I asked him about, and he goes, I think you're right on that, but I can't say it because I haven't seen the original source. And I thought, what an honorable
Right.
person. But he said, you continue
Yeah.
down that line because you might find the facts on that. I think that's a good idea, but I can't say that or
Right.
whatever. So it was really a special time. But so as we're coming up now over the next several weeks to the election, what's your thoughts on the upcoming election?
Oh. Can anyone sleep? I mean,
I know.
it's a very, I again, you think about where we are as Americans and human beings being, and I think a lot of your viewers will agree with me, just being so frantic, really, about whether it will be fair, whether your vote will count, whether they will, and frankly, with good reason. I all this whole election period, and I think we've talked about it at one point or another, I don't believe that we should expect a free and fair election. It's ridiculous. After 2020 was never corrected, why would we expect 2024 to be better? Of course I'm voting. But it becomes, are we all participating in a reality show? Are we? But vote, of course, vote, and bring out your friends, vote. But what does it mean in 2024 in America to vote when we have this complete breach of trust and problem? No apparent mechanism of political power for the people to exert our will. I mean, this is sort of, I think, another harsh lesson of this period is the institutions are gone, the parties are gone, our party, the Republican Party, is gone in terms of actually standing for truth, establishing law, making, and I speak specifically, for example, we've had almost 4 years since January 6, and we have not seen the Republicans, even in power, do anything to establish the truth of what happened on that day, take it back from this notion of armed insurrection, which continues. You hear it, in Kamala Harris, you hear it in the, I watched a little bit of a debate Ted Cruz was having with his challenger. You hear the lies, and then you think, where have the Republicans been all these years? Why didn't they ever bring these judges, the DC Circuit judges, who are, thrown due process out the window, for example? never even bring them before the Congress to it, ask them about it at least. You know, then nothing. So you have this, those are just a couple examples of where we have this this will, but we don't have this mechanism to bring it into any kind of force. And that isn't even talking about the excesses and you know really totalitarian style excesses of the so-called Justice Department, the FBI, et cetera, the legal system, the courts, all of it. It's very frightening for people because I really think we still have the majority. I really do. But there is something that broke. Well, it didn't break. It was taken from us. And this again goes to sort of this communist subversion of our country that is a century old at least. I mean, we're not looking at, oh my gosh, since Obama or oh my gosh, since Biden. No, you know so well. This is a long time coming, but we are the people who really are experiencing what feels like an end game. So that's why you look down at the election day 3 weeks coming and you think, what's it going to be like the day after? And it is not known. And that in America, for the United States of America, to be looking at a presidential election and have these feelings as really based in reality, I don't think I'm saying anything that's crazy or wild.
No.
It's an extraordinary moment. We are in a place where we don't know what awaits us on the other side of the election. Chaos, militarization, rationing, cracked, who knows? Who knows? So it's a frightening time.
Yes. No, it is. When you lose your ability to peacefully protest by throwing the bums out and you realize that's been an illusion for a long time, like you said, they've captured both parties long ago. There just happened to be this one candidate that was so popular, they kind of have to go with him, even though they hate him and they hate what he stands for because it breaks up their establishment and their system. I thought it was so wonderful. A month or so ago, when the 200 top Republicans came out in favor of Kamala, because we knew that. We knew they were
Knew
Democrats. I
that,
was like,
sure.
finally, thank you for being honest. That's who
Yes,
you are.
exactly.
You don't turn from what
Exactly.
you believe, you say you believe, just because you don't like the candidate. You might vote for a third party, but you're not voting for the opposition that believes everything the opposite of what you've always said. It was a great moment to me. I'm like, no, good. We're finally the wheat and the chaff is being separated out. And so we'll know who is on our team. I'm so thankful that, again, that we're in this situation, just having had tens of millions of more Americans wake up, though. So we didn't, 20 years ago, no one on our side was awake to anything hardly. And now we've got a pretty big group that is aware. So.
That's true. That's true. And that does mean a lot. It's interesting what you're describing. Remind me, Vladimir Bukovsky, who was a co-founder of the Soviet dissident movement in the 1960s and spent years in gulags and psychiatric hospitals in the Soviet Union, he described Trump. He died in 2019, but he described Trump as the interrupter. And as an interrupter, he didn't really need to know anything more about him. An interrupter of what you're describing. That is, his special talent and persona. And that is, so much a part of the reason that he is just like everyone knows. And it's this notion that everything was smooth sailing for these people, and they didn't have to come out. They didn't have to show us their colors. They could just continue what they were doing until you had this moment of interruption. That was really extraordinary. But it just reminded me of that because that's really what it's all about, is stopping them in some period of time where hopefully we can regroup, get our institutions back, get things going again, and really be strong.
And him interrupting the game is what awakens so many to the game. Because then when they realize also, wait, something's different here, and that's what I think just why people were so drawn to him, warts and all. Say, I don't care. This guy's not like all these other Clintons or Bushes or
Yeah, no.
everything we've had our life. This guy's not that. and he seems to mean what he actually says. He actually believes what he is saying. And so, no, it's a very such an interesting time. Well, I'll have to interview in the new year once we've made it through, if we have January
We've
20th,
made it through.
what has happened to our country? Where are we then? But it's interesting times. What about briefly just some thoughts on the whole thing of the Ukraine war and what's happened over there to those people? And
It's extraordinary. I will say the Ukraine war has been very difficult to follow because of it strikes me that so many of the wells of information are poisoned, and I have a really hard time following what's going on there. I have a hard time not feeling very manipulated by the whole struggle. Remember, we had, we went from COVID and Fauci being on the lawns of all the lefties in Northern Virginia to Ukrainian flags. All of a sudden, Ukrainian flags across the country. It was very bizarre. So you know there's something strange with the whole movement. Horrifying. Very a place where it just feels like one of these controlled cauldrons of struggle that actually whoever wins is not going to advance liberty in the world, because you have these two sides that are both penetrated by, looking at the EU. The EU is all about squashing sovereignty of European nations, and yet a standing for the sovereignty of Ukraine, it never made a lot of sense to me. It almost felt like this strange distraction from, if you step back from the map of Ukraine and the EU, and then you see the massive migration lines into America and Europe, that is really what's going on. That is the war against the West, not what's going on in Ukraine per se. That almost seems like a sacrifice to distract. And meanwhile, strap us in terms of using so many munitions from Western countries. And then also creating, I think, this very dangerous sympathy for Vladimir Putin on the right. I have no sympathy or interest in Vladimir Putin, but a lot of conservatives have moved toward his side, believing that he is representing some sort of sovereign Russian interest, nationalist, Christian, and I don't buy any of it. So it's a very, very upsetting, disturbing place to see, but it almost does feel like it went from COVID to Ukraine as a means of preventing us from seeing this other threat, global threat, national threat. Does that make sense?
Totally. No, I think, of course, I'm as anti-communist just like you are as they come. That's been my whole life, is studying them. But in this instance, if Kamala, when she went over there before the war started, had said the Ukraine will never be part of NATO, I do not believe Putin would have come in there at all or anything. Nothing would have happened. I do believe they intentionally provoked him because they wanted this war going.
It seems hard to look at it as a look at it like a map, two-dimensional map, and you don't even know really what is driving or who is driving Putin. It all has this fakey, I mean, not the suffering and not the dying, although again, the numbers, it's hard to understand, get a sense of really what's happening, but there's been so much bloodshed and destruction. What will that be replaced by? Smart cities? I mean, I was really put off when early in that war, you had USAID with Samantha Power over there, just gleefully planning all these digital advances and with banking and identity and the vaccine mandate, and then the shrinking of media and making it one platform, just all this stuff. It almost began, wars are proving grounds and testing areas for the next technological enslavement of humanity, basically. Yeah. And it felt like, is that what this is about? Was that what this was for? And then meanwhile, what is Putin doing? Does he stand for the opposite? No, he is also, vaccinating, digital ID, the same kind of surveillance state, all the artificial intelligence. Both sides seem to be driving toward a similar place where liberty will be extinguished more. And so that is another way it becomes hard for me to really get too deep into it. And I know a lot of good anti-communists who seriously support Ukraine and feel it is a war against communism. But, you know, I keep saying, who is we? If we, the United States, are supporting Ukraine, what are we if our government has been subverted and we don't even know who put Biden into power? Not in power anymore, but puppet power. Who created the coup of 2020? Who is calling America's shots? Is it America? So if America is acting in foreign affairs, you have to wonder, well, who is America? Who is America to act this way in these different crises that very often do not seem to be benefiting America or our interests at all? So the whole thing is a real morass, and I don't mean to duck it. But it really is hard to evaluate with what they give you.
It's so far away. It's hard for us to get accurate information from people we trust to be there.
And then we have no border.
Exactly. Yeah. But the Ukraine border matters tremendously. We'll spend hundreds of billions on their border. Yeah. There's so much. That's the whole thing. It's just the lies. When you're a liar, you get caught in your lies because you never know the difference between a lie and the truth. It's like Bill Clinton, he just lied for the sake of lying, and he couldn't remember what he had lied. So he's always contradicting his lies because he's not remembering anything. Yeah. That's the world we're in, where they'll say something like, last week you said this, which contradicts this, and they don't care. They know short memories, just keep going, just speak whatever the narrative is today.
Well, you know, Bill Clinton, who's out on the hustings, I mean, he looks like he might die on the hustings, to tell you the truth. He does not look well, but he's out there. They're enlisting Obama, Bill Clinton, and so on. He needs a special place for his role in the destruction of our border. And he was out there making noises about, you know, failure to vet illegals led to the murders of Americans, including Lake and Riley. I didn't mention her by name, I don't think, but that was the implication. And he's just talking about this, and people just let it happen. And they don't remember that 30 years ago, it was his administration that really pioneered the way to bring in illegals illegally, naturalize them, get them voting as a point of his reelection strategy in 1996. And he so subverted, this was with Al Gore and the INS and something called Citizenship USA. They so subverted the process that if only the impeachment had actually been a straightforward operation and not something that was killed by all the uniparty horrible rhinos in the Senate, that was to have been this completely lawless destruction of our naturalization process. That was to have been a major article of impeachment against him, according to David Shippers, who was the House Impeachment Counsel. Great man, died, wrote a very good book called Sellout about the whole process. And Sellout really describes it, but it really came back to me this past week when he was out there and people are so upset about this, what's happened. But it goes back to the Clinton administration, and it really was the beginning, you know, what's the beginning, but it really was a benchmark in this complete illegalization, if you will, of our process, because what they were doing back then was they were targeting swing states in the 1996 election. So they were trying to send illegals or naturalized people who shouldn't have been to the swing state, get this, of New York, New Jersey, Illinois. Those were considered swing states 30 years ago.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And now, of course, we've moved on to other states. But isn't that something? Now they're trying to get Texas and things like that. But 30 years ago, those states were considered swing states. And of course, California was not really long from having been the Republican firewall.
Yeah.
You know, that was always a Republican state until about, 1992 or 4, something like that.
Yeah.
So they did this.
It's so scripted by, it's hard to take.
It is. It is. And, you know, when it's going by in 1996, let's say, if we heard about it, or 1998, if we read a story about it, you know, it doesn't register for 30 years, really. I mean, you might decry it or think he should have been, but we now see 30 years later that those states are gone. in terms of the political map, and others are targeted, and you start feeling like some kind of a Warner Brothers cartoon figure going closer and closer to the cliff or something like that. So that's why, again, and I think, yeah, people are more awake now, but gee whiz, it's late in the
Yeah.
day.
Well, it's been a real battle. Like you've talked about your books and I've talked about, it was a march through the institutions to do exactly what has happened. They've been incredibly successful at just hijacking all the influence and then changing us as a people because of that influence and everything. So it's quite sobering.
And then
What
remember, they used to call everybody crazy who was upset about these things along the way. And I was trying to find a story, I think it was at WorldNet Daily years ago, about the what NAFTA would do to the roads up and down the our continent from South America to North America. And back, 20, 30 years ago, when I saw this story, I think it was that long ago, there was this sense of, oh, you're crazy, that won't change anything. But how are these people? A lot of people are able to drive in buses, they get bussed up part of the way. That must have something to do with that kind of infrastructure that was added to the continent over these years, that we people like us would have said, this is crazy. But now it's, I don't think it's enough to say I told you so, because you just,
Yeah.
it's really tragic. It's a tragic thing to look back on.
We've come a long way. What did you think this summer with the Trump assassination attempt, the one that was so close and so, when that happened, what were you thinking?
Well, I mean, I think it was providential that he turned his head.
Yes.
That was an extraordinary moment. But in terms of how it happened and just trying to learn how it could have happened, it's very alarming. It just feels so much as if he is continually placed, put forward as a sitting duck, waiting for these things. And of course, there was the golf course incident more recently down in Florida. Again, people with very strange connections that we never get run down, because there's no real media in terms of whether it's the Ukraine world, or whether it's the FBI, or whether it's just, there's so many disturbing markers that make it clear to me that this is something that the deep state is pushing and or creating opportunities for. And so it's terrifying. It's terrifying. I think Trump is very conscious of, walking the walk of martyrdom. He's at peace with it. I feel like I've never, I think one thing Trump deserves is people to recognize his vast and truly unique courage.
Yes,
I mean, a
absolutely.
man is a lion, he's Beowulf, he's, it's incredible. There's so many detractors for all the obvious reasons we keep hearing about, that is a lot of static and propaganda and all the rest of it to try to make us to alienate people from his obvious attraction and charisma. But the courage is inspiring, and people should be inspired by it.
No, I could tell that's what flipped the switch on Elon Musk when he saw Trump stand up after being shot, he's bleeding, and just with that vengeance of a, I mean, fight, fight, fight. I mean, I did too. I'm like, what kind of person could do that? Elon Musk realized that's not normal. No
Not
one could do
normal.
that. That's like a
No.
Davy Crockett at the Alamo. That's someone just doing something. You go, how could they have stayed there when they know they're all dying the next morning? They just did because it was right. So no, I agree with you. I thought
Heroic.
it was just a special moment too, and I'm praying that God will continue to protect him because I know that's the simplest solution to their problem. Once he's gone, we go back to the old games of our side, your side, and they're marching down the road all the time, regardless of who's in there. And I think we all know that too. That's why everyone, the people that are, I've been to a few of his rallies and things, and I see the people there. They probably have more hope in him than they should, but I understand it. I understand they go, no, this is the first person in my life I think is actually standing up for me. He actually cares about me personally. And that is always inspiring to see that in someone that's in a different world than we are. Whether it's his billionaire status, his business status, his former president status, he's in a different world. But he steps right down into ours, where you're like, no, this guy's like my buddy. And the people feel that.
Yeah, they do. And that's another reason why the left and the right hate him so much. There's a lot of envy and upset that someone could connect with the people. And that really was the whole magic of 2016. I had a friend who used to be a very, MSM news photographer, and he was on that campaign in 2016, and he was on that campaign in 2020, Trump. And in 2016, I remember him, before the election, I remember him telling us that the people who come out for Trump, he was depressed. He said they look so downtrodden. They, they love to come see him, but they looked very worn out and grayed out. And anyway, he won. And then 4 years later, he's out on the same hustings with Trump. And he told us, he said, you can't believe the transformation. It's like people came back. It was utterly amazing. And I don't know if he took crowd shots to compare. It would have been a good exercise. But he was saying, totally different people. America was a totally different place 4 years later because of Trump. The issues, the border, the manufacturing, these were American issues that the Uniparty and the Rhinos and the Bushes and everybody else taken off the table. We weren't ever supposed to make a peep about immigration or global economics, et cetera, ever, ever again. That's why so many people never even voted. They just thought, what's the difference? I live in, Pennsylvania. It's dead. It's always going to be dead. But no, that was the magic of Trump's appeal, which was to this old time America. And that's why when the New York Times thought they were going to trap him by getting him to claim that he was America first, and then they could go with the anti-Semitism and the Lindbergh and the, pro-Nazi and all that garbage. None of it was true, but that's what they say. He just says, yeah, I like America first. I'm America first. And it was, he revived it from, really 1941, when it disbanded on the beginning of World War II for America, to 2016, where he said, yeah, I like that. And they couldn't believe it, that it was like foiled again. They were just, they thought they had him. And it became a new way of understanding for most Americans where we should be, how we should order our lives, and how we should look at the world. America first.
Yeah, that's right. No, and it so reminded me back when we were both younger, but in 1980 when Reagan came to office, it was the same thing. He's so connected with the people.
You knew
he was honestly telling you what he believed. And that we were so discouraged after Jimmy Carter. I was just a young man in my family, but I could see my parents, the effect on him of just how they destroyed the economy and everything. And then he comes in there. And I remember one of his speeches, I was probably 15 in 1980. He talked about, you young people need to start businesses. You need to. And I literally grabbed a hold of that. And I finished high school, went to college, and then I started a restaurant. But it was inspired by Ronald Reagan. I want to be part of building this thing back. Yeah. And I just thought that's so desperately what we need. And Trump is that again, of a leader that's inspiring you to be the best you can be. And yes, you can do it. I don't care what they say. You can make it. And America's dream is still there and everything. And I think that's what I think a lot of the Black community is starting to realize, that is who Trump is also.
Yes.
He's telling us, no, you can do it. Don't listen to these liars that have held you down for 60 years with the Great Society programs. You can make it in America. And so there, it's neat. A lot of the podcasts and stuff I listen to are some Black individuals that, they've got it, and they're such a bright light in their community of expelling the lies, which as whites, it's hard to. I live in Alabama, where there's a lot of Black people, and I can build one-on-one relationships, but you can't speak openly as a white man bashing the Democrats and telling, they're destroying you, they hate you. It's hard to do that without them thinking you're attacking them, which of course you're not. But the black people that wake up, they're so powerful in that
Well,
community.
yeah, and look how Obama was out there basically berating black men for not supporting Kamala Harris. I mean,
Unbelievable.
it was pretty interesting. They're
Yes.
very afraid, and then she comes out with some kind of an agenda to basically bribe black men with loans and marijuana and all this crazy agenda. And you just think they're scared. I mean, they are. I think they are scared. But you don't know who's behind the screen at this point, who's behind the curtain, what will happen, will they try to pull it? I think there's a second scenario. The obvious one, they will cheat somehow. What happens? We lose. But the other scenario is that Trump does come in and they just make life so hard. They essentially escalate the civil war that is underway. We are in a very strange state of civil war, not a conventional civil war, but they escalate and they make it impossible, or the streets are chaos, the cities are anarchy. What's going to happen to all the illegals that are in all of our cities and towns, small towns, as we now know, as well? So there are probably two roads here that, depending on what they try to pull, again, assuming it's not going to be free and fair the way it should be, but the powers that be probably are gaming down the two roads, which one will work best. And one could be with a Trump win that then they go right into lawfare. Apparently, the Democrats have already come up with legislation that is going to somehow allow them not to certify Trump's election. This is what Jamie Raskin's been working on, others. Bill Kristol and his groups, they've been the Rhino Republican people, they have been gaming out all kinds of lawfare, really war games, I guess, or court games, how to stop Trump in court, how to stop his administration in court. So they definitely are preparing for war. And which way it'll go, I guess, is what we have to wait and see, but it will not be easy.
They always have plan B, C, D, E, F. I've read their stuff and then gone to some of their meetings. They're like, they plan so far in advance for every possible outcome because they always want to be a win-win situation for them. No matter what happens, we won, where they're prepared for everything. So yeah, no, it's an interesting, I think it's a good time to be alive. It's a good time to have a purposeful, meaningful life. It's a good time to be engaged in what's going on because it makes a difference. We need to, each individual friend we wake up, each person, coworker, whatever, to understand what's going on and to join the side of truth. All we care about is the truth. That's what we're looking for. That's what we want to expose. That's what we want to follow. And we need to pray that God directs it in that way. But the Civil War scenario you were saying, I could picture the thing that would be the fuse for that, the most of anything I can picture, is if they let him win the election and then they don't certify him. Where then our side, some of them just because they're hopeless, then they're like, okay, we have no alternative. We got our
That's
guy
what
in
they
there and you
want.
won't even put, I mean, I again hope that would not happen or whatever, but
Or they
it's,
create that. We saw what they created, the Fedsurrection of January 6th. There are all kinds of deceptions
That's
that
right.
our own countrymen are involved in, which is, the horror really of our time, that this kind of spycraft is used against the American people to subvert our own republic. It's the worst possible thing when this comes from within. It's one thing to have an enemy without, but the enemy within is so much more difficult, first of all, to understand, and second of all, to stomach. It's really hard when it's your own people, regardless of their foreign supporters or overlords even. But it's a difficult thing to really accept. And people have to become even more aware. Not everyone's your friend. You have to be careful, especially people who are patriots who want to get involved in groups and things like that. I think it was Solzhenitsyn, who was asked, well, why didn't you organize any opposition to the Soviet government? Why didn't you do this? And he said, as soon as we start one group, it's infiltrated. There was no way because the infiltration from the spies, the police, the Stasi, the KGB, the FBI, as we know from January 6th and the Fed napping of Governor Whitmer in Michigan, they infiltrate you. So you have to be really careful, about any sort of organization, which is something we shouldn't, as Americans, we don't want to have to do, but that is our reality.
Oh, completely. I remember reading some documents back in the 70s when they were saying any group, the FBI, different of 20 or more, we want to know what they're doing in America. This is the 1970s, something I was reading. I can't remember what the exact year was, but I was like, wow, that they've always been scared of the American people. And you would only be scared of the American people when you're up to no good. It's just like you would never disarm a law-abiding citizen. You would want every citizen, if you're law-abiding, we'll give you, the government will give you a weapon and teach you how to use it because we want you to be there to stand up for the innocent and protect and stand against evil. So it's being that 50 years ago, our own government's like, okay, now any group of any size, we need to try to get information on what are they talking about, what are they doing. Well, 50 years later, with all we've been through, that is a dumb. I think that's all January 6 was, is they had penetrated every group of any size to stir up the ideas or stir up the emotions and get a couple of the people that are not stable to join them. And then we know now there was at least 200 FBI agents in Trump garb inside and outside of the Capitol before it was even broken in. So I mean, as more came out from Congress, you're like, oh my goodness, it was a complete. Complete
No,
setup.
it was a setup. It was a frame up. It was. And then meanwhile, they had Kamala Harris at DNC headquarters where the pipe bomb incident was underway as I think plan B, but they didn't need to use that. And so that has just disappeared from the whole story, which is amazing. So much of what again, we really are spectators or extras, in these kinds of reality shows that are going on. And it's very strange because the manipulation is so intense. And again, we were talking about at the very beginning, everything is a lie. It's pretty much everything you see in the public venue is that they want you to see is not true.
No, that's right. Well, the last question I have for you, because I know a lot of people are thinking about this, and you talked about a little bit on one of your Patreon videos, but 5 or 10 years ago, I think almost anyone in America, if we were to ask them or ask ourselves, do you think the government can control the weather at all? We'd probably gone, I don't think so. I mean, because it wasn't out there
That's
much
true.
in the public spaces. Well, you've researched and dug in and studied that as some other people have too recently. What's the reality about that, about things that our government has done in the past and is capable of doing that might have had some play there in North Carolina and Florida and some of those things?
Well, it is a reality that the government has been deeply involved in trying to affect the weather. Maybe control is the word that, is too strong. Maybe you can't control every little bit of sunshine and wind. Okay. But really, since World War II, and even before there were efforts, but with, of course, the advance in aircraft, the government has been deeply involved in trying to affect storms. So there's civil uses of that, but there are also military uses of that. And the first one of the big projects, missions that is researchable and the government has admitted to was a 5 or 6 5-year project during the Vietnam War, whereby the US military Air Force was able and set out to intensify the rain during the monsoon seasons in Southeast Asia. And this was seen as a military strategy and weapon to wipe out roads, to wipe out bridges, to make it hard to travel and cause mudslides and all the rest that would interrupt the supply of the Viet Cong. It had a military use. It's a shocking thought. And what really shocks me, and of course I was a child at the time, so I'm not too mad at myself, but this was discussed in public hearings in, I think it was 1974. And I don't know why we didn't know about it going forward into the 80s when everybody was worried about, for example, nuclear bombs. I'm more worried about weather control, to tell you the truth. But this is just, I mentioned this one because it really happened. It's in our capability, and that's 50 years ago. So I was have become increasingly concerned about just what I see in the skies above me. Constant, if it's not some sort of weather control, I still want to know what it is. Why are jets using fuel and polluting our skies pretty much 24/7 sometimes, tracking our skies, causing the blue to go away and become a pale white, yucky, milky thing, and more. So when you put it all together and then you start seeing these storms hitting places of strategic and political importance, mineral importance, and so on, disrupting in this intensified way that we are not, did not happen much. You have to ask yourself, who is involved, what is possible, and why is there absolutely no discussion of this? It's not enough to say it's crazy. It has to be discussed. When you combine that with what the government, and this was under Trump as well as Biden, discussed this need to investigate what they call solar radiation management, which is a me method of filling the skies with metals and other horrible things that supposedly reflect the sun. I mean, talk about crazy. But they are involved in this, and they are deep into at least experimenting with it. I think we're way past experimentation. I think we're into implementation. At some point, they will come out with that. And you see more and more discussion in environmental press about the need to manage the weather, the need to manage the solar rays that hit the earth, things like that. So none of it is cartoon. This is all real stuff. And so the question becomes, and the logical question becomes, is our government, nefarious elements of our government, involved in this practice now in terms of what's going on with these hurricanes, what's going on with droughts? You know, just it's a very it's there's nothing strange about having the question, given we know what we know the technology is, and given many instances of cloud seeding that are just regular. You know, it's just a regular process in terms of, you know, beefing up electric, you know, water run electric grids and ski areas, and I mean, it's all over the world. Very famously, Olympics, China Olympics were cloud seeding for their Olympics. I think there's also a very famous example after Chernobyl. The Soviets were able to move the clouds of radiation away from their peoples. I think it went to, I don't know, I want to say it went to Lithuania or something, but they just sent up jets and made clouds move. Is that not controlling weather? It is. And that's decades ago as well. So it's a real thing. And given how we know through COVID, the lengths to which the government will go to force us into these dangerous and deadly conditions, weather is just another weapon, it seems, against us. And so I think it's something that Robert Kennedy Jr. has entertained. You know, he's a very big environmentalist, very left environmentalist. I saw him in an interview with Dane Wigington, who runs a website called Geoengineering Watch. He's been doing lots of work and very good documentary called The Dimming that goes into what is in the skies when we see those trails. But Kennedy seems to have gotten to a place where he is aware of it and concerned about it and has promised to try to address it. We'll see, you know, if he ever got any sort of power in a Trump administration. But it's a very, it may be the biggest problem that we never talk about, the biggest threat to us, because we're talking about rain and air and earth and living creatures. It affects everything. So
No,
that's kind of
that's
where I am on it.
yeah.
I'm just, you know, learning about it, but
Right.
I, you know, think it's very disturbing that people will look at it and then look down at the ground and
Yeah.
not register.
Yeah, well, I think in days gone by, they just it was a bridge too far, but I don't think it is anymore.
Yeah,
And then
once
the
again.
historical facts that are proved this has been going on. And just think how everything is so advanced since the 1970s. I mean, please, you don't think they've gotten better than that if they've gotten better in everything else? So no, it's a logical thing. One of my sons is a pilot, and he spent a week there in North Carolina helping out front doing helicopters and stuff to feed and do what they
Oh, that's
could.
great.
But he said it was really neat. He said, all the people you're dealing with on the ground, they think it's purposeful. He guys, it was he was even surprised. He knows we talk as a family about everything. So he's used to hearing this kind of talk. But he said, no, Dad, almost everyone goes, no, we think this is our governor or something, because we've never had rains like this. We've never had anything even close to this. And a lot of these people have lived there for 70 years, and they said, there's never been anything like this. This was different. Something was very different about this. Anyway, that was interesting to me that the majority of people he would even speak to on the ground were thinking along these lines. We think that something's going on here. I hate it, because if they can create, or maybe not create, but control a hurricane or enhance it or barely direct it
Intensify, direct.
with their climate, crisis nonsense. Then it's a very, they can just keep having them come, and then we change our whole life. We move into our little private cells so the government can protect us from the environment. And we go, oh my goodness, the whole thing was a scheme. It had nothing to do with Dr. Patrick Moore, on a side that you'd be interested in. He's the co-founder of Greenpeace. And I went up to his home in Vancouver several years back because I wanted to talk to him about the environmental movement, because he really cares. I mean, he started Greenpeace, but he left in the 1980s. I said, Dr. Moore, why'd you leave? And he said famously, he goes, because the communists took it over, and he actually used the word communist, which I was so shocked. And he said, now they're just trying to destroy capitalism worldwide. And he goes, the things they're doing are actually hurting the environment. That's why he was just mad. And it's hurting people. He's the classic kind of bleeding heart liberal that was like, kids are, minority kids all over the world are suffering because of their policies and dying every year by the millions. And so he said it's been totally hijacked, and it's only about communistic totalitarian control. That's all it's about. And it was, anyway, it was from someone that really cares and is doing real
Oh,
things.
so
It
much.
was so powerful to hear that.
Well, it really hurts, when you see fields of solar panels that will never ever again be able to grow any plants or food in the name of green. Green, there was a wonderful writer named Rosa Khoury who wrote Behind the Green Mask about Agenda 2020. I guess she died in 2019, and she had this wired early on, coming from the left again, maybe like the Greenpeace co-founder, and understood the communists had taken it over and had nothing to do with protecting the environment, but it became this label of green that becomes so hard to talk to people about because they think you are criticizing, a warm and fuzzy bunny, and it's quite a con. But it's again, I think 100 years of brainwashing brings you to a place where people will believe it because it's actually not that hard to figure out that it's a con when you look at a solar field or you look at some of these other instances of utter desecration of the land in the name of green. Or my favorite, with the electric power that requires lithium mining, speaking of North Carolina and other places, this incredible just raping of the earth to get these materials out to create cell phone batteries and things like that that then become pollution in and of themselves. I mean, the whole thing is such a con and such a horror that has nothing to do with living well or healthily that it's truly astonishing. It may be the most astonishing con of all, the green con. But again, when you see what happened in North Carolina and all the other sort of ancillary stories about FEMA and the mountain people and the independent people, the Trump votes and everything else, and the lithium and quartz. And one thing, Dr. Peter and Ginger Breggin have a Substack, and Ginger Breggin wrote a piece where she discovered in the UN 2030 maps that area of America is designed to become some kind of a carbon sink which means it basically is supposed to go back to nature. Probably could also include a mine or two, but they envision it as being basically forest primeval with no people. So again, you think, well, why did the hurricane hit there and wipe out towns? I mean, you look at the footage of not trailers, houses knocked off their foundations by mud. And you can't even imagine the force of such a thing as being just simply Mother Nature. It doesn't pass the smell test. I mean, when we know about all the other factors, if we didn't know about the other factors, we might just say, well, that was just a million year flood. But you know about the other factors, it is our duty to try to put them together and ask the question and get our representatives to ask the question and do something in terms of understanding it, because this would only get worse without doing that, without stopping it.
No, that's right. Well, it's a very interesting world in which we live.
You know the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Well, that happened, and we don't have a boring life. It's not 1950s with June Cleaver, but no, I so appreciate your just sharing your thoughts on things and insights. It's nice to hear and just reflect off others just to make sure you're on the right track and everything. Anything else you'd like to share in closing? And then also definitely share the best way for people to connect with you and be able to get your
Sure.
resources.
Sure. Well, I have been putting up about a weekly Patreon video, and I'm on Twitter at Real Diana West and Gab at Real Diana West. And I will be bringing out a new collection of essays soon, but that is, to come. And those are the best places to reach me at this point.
Good, good. Well, I really appreciate your time and all the things you do to help educate people to what's going on.
Well, thank you, Curtis. Likewise to you. And again, it's wonderful to even talk about these terrible things with such a wonderful friend. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, I hope that was an interesting conversation and maybe you learned some things in the process. Her books are Death of the Grown-Up, The Red Thread, and American Betrayal, if you're wanting to find those on Amazon or somewhere else. And she has a Patreon channel, which we have linked below, if you're wanting to support her in any way or to hear her weekly and monthly videos. But I appreciate you joining me today. Our verse for this week is Proverbs 21:2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. Everybody always thinks, well, I'm doing what's right, but God knows your real intents and the heart and what you're really trying to do. And sometimes on this earth, it's hard for us to see the truth of everything because there's so much deception and wickedness and lies floating around. But God sees it very clearly. So we want to be clean and pure, doing the right thing for the right reason, and then let the chips fall where they may. I know God is doing a lot of things right now. We can see all over our country and world, and we just want to be part of that. But thank you so much for joining me today. And until next week, God bless you.